You're listening to the Rockford Symphony Orchestra podcast, where we look to inform about our upcoming events and give insight to behind-the-scenes happenings at the RSO.
This is Phil Davidson, and with me today is Rockford Symphony Orchestra music director Yaniv Attar, and we are discussing the upcoming Masterworks concert, Love, It's Complicated. Yes, indeed.
I had to chuckle, sorry.
No, because we know it's true.
Yep.
And it is, of course, happening on Valentine's Day, Saturday, February 14th at 7:30 p.m., where else but the Coronado Performing Arts Center. And it's great to see you again, Yaniv.
Great to see you, Phil.
Okay, I understand the love part of the title, so... But why it's complicated?
So actually, funny story about this is that the title for this program actually came way after I already programmed for this concert. So it wasn't intentional. When I looked at the calendar and saw that Valentine comes, you know, on the Saturday that we were going to perform, and I said, perfect, I'll have a romantic program, perfect for Valentine. And I programmed the program with the Tchaikovsky, the Strauss, and the Brahms, three of the most romantic composer, Lush, whatever you want to call it. And then after I programmed it, it was approved, and I'm thinking of the stories behind behind those pieces. You know, Tchaikovsky's Romeo and Juliet, we know how that ended. Strauss, Don Juan, he didn't have a very good ending either. And then the Brahms, I don't want to spoil the surprise, I'll tell the story a little bit about later, but also it has a complicated story. And I'm thinking, is this what love is all about? And then actually Julia, our incredible executive director, she said she came up with this title, and yeah. I said, perfect. But it's also perfect because while we still have the problematic stuff, or not the complicated stuff, I would say, in the first half, ending with the Brahms has a very good message of solving this complication and kind of a resolution to all this. So I think it all ties in very nicely.
Well, we begin the program with Tchaikovsky's Romeo and Juliet Fantasy Overture. And, I mean, as you alluded to before, of course, that love affair is certainly complicated.
Uh-huh.
So what was going on in Tchaikovsky's life when he was composing this piece?
So Tchaikovsky had a complex life, to say the least. Part of it from a personal perspective, and he was struggling with that a lot. He was someone who couldn't express love the way he wanted to in 19th century Russia as a gay man. And also, throughout his life, he always had a lot of self-doubt as a composer. Mm-hmm. So the struggle for him was through his entire life. And I think going to this famous Shakespearean play is almost like perfect for him, because Shakespearean characters are always so complex and such big characters. He must have seen himself as a Shakespearean character in all this, almost like mirroring his life. And he could bring his struggles, I think, very easily into the music that he was writing. And it's not the first Shakespearean stuff that he wrote. I think he wrote for Hamlet. There's music. Yeah.
So... But why Romeo and Juliet in particular?
I think there's so much in the story about struggle, about conflict, the desire for love versus reality, which again totally mirrored his life. Mm-hmm. You know, he was married very, very shortly, I think only a few months, to a woman that he hardly knew and hardly saw in his life, even though they were married. And again, so it's reality versus the desire for love. So I think he could easily identify with that story and express everything he wanted to express, not in words, but through music. And I think for Tchaikovsky, that's a big deal of the music that he writes.
So this is the fantasy overture. Can you shed some light on that term?
So we are used to classical music being very much structured by form. A movement of a symphony would have a very clear structure of exposition, development, recapitulation, how you develop materials and stuff. But in the Romantic period, they started to write a lot of what's called tone poems. It's like a one-movement work that has a narrative. There's a story behind it, and it's told without words through music. And so the Fantasy Overture, I think, it's a step from the structure stuff. It's not completely a tone poem, like the Strauss's later. So it still has structure of classical music that we know. You know, there's an exposition, there are two themes, they're developed, then there's a recap at the end. And that was very important for Tchaikovsky as a composer because, as I mentioned, the whole thing of self-doubt, he was really looking into the major composers for this kind of influence. This year we performed, you know, his Fifth Symphony in our first concert. And, you know, he was very influenced, for example, by Beethoven and the way Beethoven developed materials and all that. So I think Tchaikovsky tried to bring both worlds of the narrative through music, but also keeping the classical forms that were so important for his compositional style. So it's that kind of a combination of both.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask you later on about a tone poem, specifically what it is, but I guess you've...
Yeah, so when we get to the Strauss, I'll talk a little bit more about that.
All right. So speaking of Strauss, we move on to Don Juan, which I quote... sweeps you into the daring adventures of the legendary seducer. any ideas as to why Strauss chose this particular legend as the subject of one of his, I think it was one of his first tone poems?
Yeah, this was, I think he was in his early 20s when he wrote this this tone poem. So you could probably identify with, you know, the seducer that, you know, gets a lot of love, but still feels the emptiness at the end of it because it was more the pursuit of love than actually what you find. So I think it probably resonated with him a lot, and he find this as a good character for a tone poem.
So let's talk about a tone poem a little bit more.
So in this, I think it takes the whole thing of a narrative to a whole different level because there is no concern of form anymore as it is in the Tchaikovsky part. This is more about telling the story of the seducer, his moods, his thinking. And so you would find a very abrupt changes in harmony, in tempo, in very bold orchestrations. Everything is, especially for that time, for his time, so unexpected. You know, if you tell a story, you don't really go by structure. The story has a rhythm of its own.
Right.
So it's very limiting if you're trying to do it through structural movements. Everything has to take a life of its own. And I think the tone poem is exactly that direction. And I think Strauss was one of the first ones to actually develop it into, you know, from short tone poems that he had at the beginning, like Don Juan or Till Eulenspiegel, which is similar to ones that he wrote later in life, like The Hero's Life, which is, you know, 45 or 50 minutes long. And it's much, much more complex than this.
Well, I saw a description which says, and I'm going to read it as I saw it, Don Juan reflects the late Romantic era and the emerging modernist tendencies of the late 19th century. It's a mouthful, but how so? I mean, what are we talking about here?
I mean, first of all, I mean, the way he uses the orchestra is, and I don't know how he does it, and it developed through his life. He can describe anything in the most perfect way that no composer, I think, managed to do before him. Even just the character of Don Juan from the beginning, it's incredible what he can do with orchestration. But again, I think the elements of unpredictability of music, of what's happening, that takes you away from the order of classical and romantic music as we know it, with the seeds, I think, for example, for what modern music will be. I mean, I can't imagine the music of Gustav Mahler without Strauss. So it really brought the foundation of modern music and post-romantic music into this world. And Strauss had a major, major part in this.
Well, I understand that the opening is particularly electrifying. How does Strauss musically capture Don Juan, his energy, his charisma, right at the start?
So I think it's all about energy and charisma and confidence that the character needs to have. And this is one of those notorious places, actually, for both conductors, but even more so for orchestral players. This is the most famous excerpt that musicians have to prepare for audition.
Oh.
It starts with a really fast scale. There's like a gazillion notes that you have to play in about 2 seconds, and you need to be able to hear all of them. So what's exciting about it is not just that extremely virtuosic, bold, strong statement from the players, which is, you know, a perfect illustration of what Don Juan is. The interesting part about it is that, similarly to Beethoven 5, for example, the music actually starts with a rest. It doesn't start with notes. I mean, you don't hear it when you... But this is very difficult to play. You always ask conductors in auditions, how do you start Beethoven 5 and how do you start Don Juan? Because to start music with silence is very hard. I mean, you hear ta-ta-ta-tom, right? You don't know that there's a silence before, but there's a rest and then the note comes. So the way you conduct it, conduct forte with silence, or for a musician to start like this, I think is very, very challenging. They always play the first page of Don Juan in every major orchestra auditions for string players, so they're always terrified of it. but again, the music is so brilliant and virtuosic and confident and charismatic. I think it portrays exactly what Don Juan character is.
Well, I understand there are times where Strauss experiments with form and harmony that are very innovative for his time. How so?
So I think, you know, this is exactly where the tone poem went away from things like Tchaikovsky, you know, Romeo and Juliet. You had themes that were attached to characters, that were attached to moods. And again, because they have a life of their own, you were following more the story. The shocking harmonies came to you, dissonances that resolved, but not in a way that we are used to from Beethoven or Schumann, or it's completely different. So in that way, he was so innovative, and he let the story dictate how the music goes, as opposed to having structures and themes and let's develop them in a certain way to follow the rules. There are no rules. Or the rules are much less strict, so to speak.
Well, let's move on to the final piece in the concert, and that's Brahms' double concerto for violin and cello. What was the reason that why did he write this concerto?
So this is a very interesting story. So Brahms had a falling out with a friend of his. After Brahms testified in that violinist's divorce case on behalf of his wife.
Ooh.
Love's complicated, right?
Yeah, boy.
and that friend was clearly mad at him. So after a while, this was Brahms' way as a peace offering, so to speak, for them to come together again.
Did it work?
Yes. So, you know, we're saying love is complicated, but I think it's kind of resolved in this piece because it's all about forgiveness and friendship that comes together at the end. It's actually interesting the way the concerto starts. There's a statement from the orchestra. And, I mean, usually you have a cadenza is usually the part where the soloists have a virtuosic part to play. Now we have two musicians, right? But the violinists have their own little cadenza by themselves, and the cello have their own cadenza by themselves. And this is quite at the beginning of the piece. It's almost like we start with this conflict. They don't talk to each other. And then little by little, they become one voice and united. So to me, that I feel like that's the message Brahms wanted to bring in this piece.
Well, working right into the next question I was going to ask you, because this is a double concerto. So if you can elaborate on that concept a little bit and how it affects what we will hear.
You know, when concertos started in music, actually in the Baroque period, it was quite common to have two and sometimes even three instruments playing a concerto together. I mean, the concertos were a lot different. They weren't as long or as complex as the, you know, classical and then romantic concertos. In the classical and romantic era, there was more focus on one soloist for the concerto, one person to shine, so to speak. So writing a concerto for two instruments was very rare still. Even today, you don't find a lot of... Most concertos are not written for more than one instrument. So here I think it's the story that drives the actual concerto thing. And I almost don't even think about it as a concerto. It's almost, I don't want to say a symphony with two instruments soloing, but it feels like chamber music between two people with the support of an orchestra. It's even as strange as a concerto, so to speak.
But you said something about a conflict between the two soloists before. So, I mean, do you notice that throughout the piece?
I think at point, you know, you would hear them almost arguing with each other. Mm-hmm. Like at the beginning, like I said, they don't even speak to each other. You hear them arguing. Then you hear them maybe finishing each other's thoughts. I mean, these are really different instruments, you know, not just in register. I mean, violin is, of course, high. The cello is, of course, you know, very sonorous, low instrument. So they're very different in character, but the way they come and unite throughout the piece, from being total strangers to being something that is totally in harmony with each other, is fascinating. Yeah, I think people need to expect less the idea of a virtuosic concerto that you hear the soloist show off, mm-hmm. something crazy. That's not what this piece is about. It's about, like I said at the beginning, it's about forgiveness and about friendship. So there's a real deep human story in this for this piece that come across very beautifully in the music.
Okay, well, it sounds intriguing, very intriguing. Is there anything else about it that's particularly intriguing?
No, I think it's a, again, I wouldn't even want to call it a concerto. It's a lovely chamber music work with a deep human story that comes throughout in the music.
Okay, we've been talking about the fact there are two soloists.
Correct. I'm really excited to work with both of them, not just because they're each a great soloist on their own, but because it's a father and daughter. Link, who is our, he used to play cello in our orchestra, but he's extremely busy cellist, used to play, I think, with Grand Park Festival, often plays with the Chicago Symphony. I mean, he's conduct a youth orchestra and other orchestras in the area. So, I mean, he's a incredible musician. And his daughter, Genevieve, she was a few years ago a winner of our concerto competition for youth. Mm. And I think 2 years ago, she was accepted to be a violinist of the Cleveland Orchestra, one of the best orchestras in the world, on the top five orchestras in the United States. So to have a father-daughter, you know, when you think, you say love is complicated, there's nothing complicated about a love between a daughter and her dad. So I think it's also a beautiful tribute to this concerto to have this relationship between a father and daughter coming and playing for us. So really looking forward. You know, they're not stranger to Rockford. So it's going to be a real treat to have both of them on stage and see that chemistry that only a father and daughter could have,
right.
You know, playing a piece.
Well, and of course, there's sound bites.
Yes.
So once again, let's remind people of what that's all about.
So this is the Friday before the concert at Monatisi at noon. I interview the guest artists. You get to hear them talk about the program, about their life, about other activities they have, and just get to know our guest artists on a very intimate level. You, of course, have, if you choose, there's lunch that you can buy. You don't have to have lunch there, but if you want, you can purchase lunch. It's great and casual and real fun to meet the guest artists and interact with them.
Well, this is great. There can't be a better way of spending Valentine's Day than
absolutely
going to see Love, It's Complicated. Another great musical experience presented by Rockford Symphony Orchestra on Saturday, February 14th, 7:30 p.m. at the Coronado Performing Arts Center. For more information about the concert, tickets, and more, go to rockfordsymphony.com or call 815-965-0049. This is Phil Davidson.
I'm Yaniv Attar.
Thank you for listening.